For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for kicking off your week with us. This is your Monday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99, and you can check out all of our newest fantasy baseball work at Ethos Fantasy BB, where you get talking about podcasts, articles, news and notes, every bit of updates to our draft guide, and literally just all baseball content you guys can check out over there. And make sure you guys are going to sportsethos.com and checking out our draft guide. There's so much stuff in there. We're adding stuff pretty much every single day. We're looking at, I think, 26 total articles, something along those lines. And we launched our draft tracker over the weekend. If you guys are not familiar with the draft tracker, you put in the picks as your draft is going along. And using the ATC projections, it compares you in real time with the other teams in the room. It's color-coded, so if it's red, then you're obviously, you know, a little bit short compared to the rest of the league in terms of that category. If it's coded hard green, then you're doing pretty well compared to the league. And it, of course, updates in real time. It's really, really great stuff. So check that out and everything else in our draft guide. You can check it out at the link in the description of the episode, and make sure you guys are at least checking it out. You can check out the homepage and just look at all the different articles we have. There's a lot of great stuff there. And today we are joined by somebody who is also a part of Sports Ethos, somebody who did contribute to the draft guide. Haven't had a guest on from Sports Ethos in a little while. I guess I had been on that live stream a few weeks ago, but this is the first true Sports Ethos like episode that I've had with a guest in a very long time. And we're talking a first base preview today. And I'm joined by Daniel Rotter for the first time on the show. Daniel, thank you so much, man, for making the time. I appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited. I'm a new member of the Sports Ethos team for this coming season. Mentioning the draft guide, I helped to put out the sleepers and busts articles for the guide. And today I also just recap my TGFBI draft. So pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, there is so much content in there. Draft recaps. Daniel's done amazing work, and you should be checking him out over on Twitter at DROT_6. Make sure that you guys are giving him a follow. Very underfollowed a lot of the members of the Sports Ethos team here, trying to get those numbers up for these guys as we're getting into the season. But like I alluded to, we are doing a first base preview today. We're going to be going through a lot of previews this week. I tweeted it out. A lot of fun guests coming on the show this week. We're starting off with first base, and we're going to be going kind of tier by tier here and talking about the different groups. First, Daniel, How have your drafts gone so far this season? You mentioned that you just concluded TGFBI and you wrote that up on the website. Everybody should be checking out that write-up. You went in depth there. But outside of TGFBI, what have your drafts looked like so far? Have you been happy with what you've seen?
I mean, I would say so. I haven't really done a lot of my, I guess, actual season-long leagues that I'm going to be keeping up with, because if I'm being honest, I kind of prefer to wait, especially with all this injury news that comes out, like with the Gerrit Cole MRI today and the various injuries that come up throughout the season. So I like to kind of hold off for maybe another week at least before I do a lot of my drafts. I'm currently in the middle of a slow draft for a dynasty startup that's in round 15 out of too many. But I've been excited about that. I've been going pretty young, so the goal is to absolutely dominate that league in like a year or two.
Yeah, draft season, I had no restraint this year. I started in, I don't even know if the season had ended. I think it was like 2 days into the off season where I joined a draft. I said, why not? Real degenerate stuff, guys. I don't really recommend it. But at the same time, you look back and it's like, well, I was able to get like late fourth round George Kirby in a 15-team league, and now George Kirby is like pushing second round, and a lot of different examples like that. There are examples on the other side, of course. If you took Garrett Cole in the first round of a lot of drafts, like Daniel mentioned, the news today is a little scary. We don't know exactly what the extent of it is. I was tinkering with my starting pitcher rankings today, and I haven't moved them down yet. I probably should. I just want to know a little bit more before I actually fully make that move. But yeah, there's a lot going on. Draft season is a lot of fun, and we are right in the midst of it right now. Let's talk about first base, though. What are your overall thoughts on the position? What's your philosophy? Are you targeting a couple early guys? Are you going one early first baseman? Are you punting the position altogether? What are your thoughts in general on first base this year, Daniel?
I think for me, I'm not really prioritizing getting a first base early just because I do feel very confident in the guys even outside of the top 100 at the position that you could plug in as a starting first baseman. I think that, as we'll talk about when we get through the tiers, I think that there's obviously, you know, reasonable spots to go and get one of those elite first basemen. But I haven't really said to myself, I need to come out of round four or round five with a first baseman, just because I do feel very confident in who's coming down the pipe after. And I also do like chasing those five category upside guys early, which first base does not provide a ton of.
Yeah. The thing with first base is, we mentioned it before we started recording, it's super, super deep this year. So I don't really necessarily have a set philosophy, because there have been a few different times where I have come away with Freddie Freeman in the first round, and all the things that I've told myself about waiting get thrown out the window. But that's because, as we'll get to in a few minutes, I really, really like Freddie Freeman. But as a whole, you can probably get into the 20s in terms of, you know, ranked by ADP here, the 23rd first baseman, the 24th, etc. And there's some really, really appealing guys as we go down here. So let's start off with the first tier, and let's talk about it. The first tier we're looking at is Freddie Freeman through Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So Freeman, Matt Olson, Bryce Harper, Alonso, and Guerrero in that range. I really like coming away with Freddie Freeman because I feel like he's still undervalued. We're talking about a guy who was already a top five player before we added Shohei Ohtani to this lineup. He has been aging beautifully. Like, last season was one of, if not arguably, his best season in the majors. So the thought of him like getting old and kind of slowing down, regressing or whatever, I don't really see that happening. So I really like coming away with with Freddie Freeman. With Matt Olson, we're paying for kind of a career year. I'm not massively in on him. Bryce Harper, I really like. And Alonso and Guerrero, I also really do like. I want to kick it to you and get your overall thoughts on this tier. Are you targeting any of these guys in your drafts? Have you come away with any of them so far?
Well, look, when I said that I wasn't necessarily trying to escape rounds four or five without a first baseman, that didn't mean that I don't value these guys. Like, I have Freddie Freeman ninth overall in my redraft rankings. Like, if it gets to pick nine and my top eight are gone, I'm happy to take him. And then Olson and Bryce Harper, I have kind of in like that mid to late teen range. And the thing with them is they're kind of hard to differentiate, I think, as far as which one I would definitely rather have. With Olson, like you said, you're paying for the career year. I don't know if anyone in the game right now has more like playable power than Matt Olson, maybe Judge. Or Yordan, like those are the kind of guys that Matt Olson, like his in-game power matches up with. But Bryce Harper, he does have a little bit more of a speed element. There is a possibility he could swipe you 15 bags, but maybe not hit 50 home runs. So those two to me kind of feel like a toss-up for which one I'd rather have. Alonso and Guerrero, I haven't really found myself prioritizing in drafts just because Alonso feels like such a detriment to your average early, even though he's probably a very likely 40 home run hitter. And Guerrero, obviously a talent, and he could be, you know, a top 15 overall player this year. I mean, granted, last year he has shown the ability to hit for solid average and 25 plus home runs, and he could hit, you know, close to 300 with 30 homers, which would make him super valuable. But it just kind of feels like it hasn't totally clicked for Vlad yet. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, is it going to? It's not saying I'm dissuaded from drafting him. It's just I haven't been super on him either.
Yeah, I've done, I think 11 drafts now, and I took Vlad one time. He's not somebody that I'm really overly worried about, because even his bad seasons these last couple of years, quote unquote, for a lot of players are still very good years. They're not unplayable type of seasons or whatever. He's still a very good fantasy player. It's just a matter of if he can get back to what we saw in 2021, when he did have the benefit of playing in some smaller parks in I believe it was Dunedin for a good chunk of the season, and then Buffalo. So it was definitely something we have to consider, and the projections for him still do factor in that year, because they look back over the past three seasons. So they're maybe a little bit lofty, but I still do think Vlad is fairly safe in the third round. I don't have a massive concerns. Pete Alonso has gotten more expensive over the last couple of months as somebody who has been drafting all of draft season. He was somebody where in a few of my drafts, it was the question at 30-31 if it was going to be Alonso or Guerrero. And now Alonso's ADP in March is closer to 25. He has been kind of pushing up a little bit. I don't love that. There's a lot of talent that, like you mentioned, Alonso's batting average is not amazing. I don't think it'll be as bad as last year. He had a terrible BABIP. I think he'll probably be like a 250, 260 guy, probably. But even then, you're passing up some guys who are close to 300 who also steal bases in that same range if you're going to go the Pete Alonso route. So overall, in this range, if I'm going to take a first baseman, it's probably going to be Freddie Freeman in the first round. If I don't get Freddie Freeman, just because I think that he is a top five kind of guy, then I'm probably just not really going to be worrying about first baseman until later on in the draft. Now, that's not to say that if Vlad Guerrero falls around, I'm not going to take him. But generally speaking, in most rooms, I think it's, for me, it's Freeman or bust in these first few rounds. Now, I do want to mention Bryce Harper, because I don't have a lot of concern with him. I think the power did start to come back over the second half of last year. He's in a very safe lineup. The stolen bases are a little bit of a question, but I don't really have much concern with Harper. I just don't think he necessarily differentiates himself from the field at that point that I would want to take a first baseman, especially when I'm so comfortable with the later group. But yeah, that first tier, there's nothing to not like about a lot of these guys. It's just the fact of, you know, so much talent later on. The second tier is Cody Bellinger is where we're starting here, down through Spencer Torkelson. So Cody Bellinger, Paul Goldschmidt, Tristan Casas, Christian Walker, Spencer Steer, and Spencer Torkelson. These guys going in an ADP range of about 60 to about 110 or so. Daniel, what are your thoughts on this tier as a whole?
I think this tier definitely presents you with some opportunities for good values if people are pushing them down the board. I ended up in TGFBI with Spencer Torkelson as my first baseman. I took him in the late 120s, and I felt pretty good about that just because he hit for maybe the quietest 30 home runs I think I've ever seen, because so many people were saying about how poorly he was doing, especially in the first half, and then he really turned it on. So he's a guy I could definitely see myself wanting to go after. Goldschmidt also seems like he has a possibility of being like an overly known name discount, just because he's getting older and people might be looking at the younger guys as, ooh, you know, shiny new toy. But Goldschmidt is definitely going to be reliable. Seems like he'll be as solid as they come, and probably a pretty high floor guy. So I definitely like him. Walker is going to hit you some bombs. If it's fine, like near 100, I think that that's definitely a reasonable spot to take him. And Casas, I've had some shares of Casas last year. The question is really, is he going to hit lefties? And I think for you to want to invest that high of a draft pick in a guy who hit that poorly against lefties last year is a little bit worrisome. But he obviously showed plenty of flashes, and he is super young, so there could definitely be some growth there. Belly, I mean, look, I think you know what you're getting from Belly, probably. I think you're thinking 25 homers, 20 steals, dual eligibility, and that's exciting, and that's not a guy that I want to shy away from either. So I guess if I had to recap, you know, those last couple of minutes of talking, said none of these guys I dislike, which is kind of how the position goes for me. I don't dislike any of these guys. It's just how do they compare to the people around them on the board? And do I feel comfortable with maybe even waiting a little longer because there might be someone around later that I like just as much?
So I've done, like I mentioned, too many drafts, and I've taken Bellinger once, and I took Goldschmidt once, but it was in an auction, so it wasn't your standard. You can't really compare it to what most people are doing, or a lot of people are doing anyway.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I find in this range of guys, not even this range of guys, this range of draft picks, we're talking in a 15-teamer from the fourth round till maybe like the eighth or ninth round, there are just other positions that I'm kind of prioritizing here. In a lot of cases, I'm going for starting pitching. I'm going for a closer. I'm going for an outfielder. So this hasn't really been a range where I've been landing on a lot of these guys. Actually, I misspoke because I have taken Spencer Steer once or twice, and that does come down to the multi-position eligibility. You know, I mentioned it a few times now that I kind of like to wait, and I even like to wait even beyond this range if I can. It's not anything against these players individually necessarily. Again, it's just where they're being taken in comparison to the rest of the field. Now, if I'm going to, you know, nitpick at all with like Bellinger, I don't know that we can be so sure what we're getting. It's been so up and down that maybe it's 25 homers. I've heard some people say that maybe his real power number is closer to like 17 or 18. He's also got close to a 50 home run season under his belt. So that's kind of in question. I think the stolen bases, very wide range. The batting average could be kind of a wide range. So I do like that he's staying in the same environment, and I do like the dual eligibility, but Bellinger is a little bit of a question for me, I think. Goldschmidt, I agree with what you said, that people are just kind of pushing him down because they want the shiny new toys, and he's kind of just old and boring. And people, I've mentioned this a few times throughout the offseason, I think they're discounting the Cardinals as a whole because the team was shitty last year, but it was more so the pitching that set them behind. The offense was pretty fine. It was a top 10 offense in Major League Baseball for most of the season. They faded in September for sure, but overall they were a very good offense. And just the rest of those guys, Cassis, Walker, Torkelson, I don't mind them, but again, I think I can kind of replicate that value. Maybe not the same stat lines, but I think if I'm going a little bit later on and looking at even just this next tier that we are going to get into, there's some more value that I can kind of extract. Torkelson, again, there's no stolen bases. There's not much batting average. Cassis, probably going to hit for a decent average, but maybe they do play him more against lefties, and maybe that is something that brings down his overall number. Like, I'm not sure how they're going to use him exactly. Is he going to be an every single day type of player? Are they going to sit him more against lefties? Does he play against lefties, and that kind of brings down the batting average? I have definite concerns there. So I don't love this tier as a whole. I know I just said I didn't mind them, and then I kind of just picked everybody apart a little bit. But I really don't mind them. It's more so the fact that I'm filling other positions kind of in this range. Starting pitching is kind of a target of mine, rounds 4 through 8 or so. And that's kind of who I've been landing on here. Do you find yourself targeting starting pitching, outfield, those kind of things that I mentioned in this range, or generally, would you be okay with a lot of these guys, you think, as opposed to the starting pitching or another position?
I think I also find myself looking for other positions in this range, too. And I think the way you put it is honestly a great way to sum it up. Like, you don't have to hate these guys for you to not want to pick them. It's just that there's other areas that we'd like to look into drafting, and they just don't really... I don't know. They don't really seem like this perfect culmination of a first baseman that I have to have in this range. And maybe that's why they're not in the top five and they're solid players. But you mentioned like in a 15-team league, it is really helpful to lock down those saves in rounds 4 through 8. And also you got to pick up another starter or two in that range. Probably if you didn't go outfield early, you got to start looking into outfield at that point. So it's not, again, that these guys are bad baseball players or that they're guys that I'm fading because of their skills. It's more so that I feel more safe about the guys coming on the draft board later at this position than at other positions. And that's why I think it's hard for me to convince myself to draft like a Cassis in the early 90s or Walker or Steer around 102, just because I feel like there's some similar upside to some of the guys coming next.
Yeah, this next tier, let's just get into it. It is so flush with talent in my eyes. Starting with Salvador Perez here, it depends on your format. I think a lot of them he has first base eligibility, but we're going to include him here. And then going all the way down until Isak Paredes. So it's a good little chunk, but Perez, Yandy Diaz, Josh Naylor, Christian Encarnacion Strand, Alec Bohm, Vinny Pasquantino, and then Paredes. And you can include Rhys Hoskins in that tier as well, because he's kind of jumped up a little bit recently. This is where I'm shopping. This is where I love to shop for first baseman. Yandy Diaz was incredible last season. The power was probably a little bit false. Like, I don't know that he's just going to take another step forward and be like a 30 home run guy like some people have talked about. It's not a common talking point. It was more something we were hearing last year, but he's probably like a 12, 13 home run guy, but he's going to hit 300 or higher at the top of a great lineup. Josh Naylor, I've talked about a lot this year. He was on his way to MVP votes if he didn't get hurt. We're talking a guy who is, a 300-plus hitter or close to it. He steals bases. Depending on your format, Naylor may have a second position. He may be outfield. It really depends, but that's just gravy. But I love Josh Naylor. Christian Encarnacion Strand, with the news of Noelvi Marte getting suspended, is probably more secure of a job than he was even just a few days ago. Even though I think he was probably secure, he's even more secure now. Alec Bohm is the guy in this range that I'm kind of just iffy about. I think he's fine, but he's a dual eligible player, first and third, in a really good lineup in Philadelphia, good batting average, decent power. Like, he's still fine. Vinny Pasquantino is 100 picks discounted from last year because he had shoulder surgery. He's still the same dude. I think he's healthy now, but I love him. Paredes is coming off of a great season, dual eligible. Rhys Hoskins is coming off of surgery and we didn't see him last year, but again, a 30 home run bat. There's just so much to love in this range. We're talking about like eight guys that all for me could very easily be top 100 picks that are being drafted between 130 and 200. Do you agree on this range? Are you shopping in this tier a lot for first baseman?
I agree with a lot of the things you said, just because a lot of these guys do have tools that you mentioned that make them very appealing. Yandy, his issue has always been, oh, he doesn't lift. But Yandy's exit velos have always been unreal. Like, that man can hit the ball very hard. And the only reason why he doesn't hit 30 home runs is because he doesn't lift, really. I mean, his exit velocities have always been great. And so what if he just happens to lift more? I'm not going to start that argument now because he probably won't. And he'll probably settle in at around like 15 homers. But he's going to hit for a good average just because he hits so many of those hard line drives. Naylor, I also agreed with you on. I mean, it's clear that he's really coming into his own. He's a talented overall hit for contact and power guy, and the RBIs were off the charts last year. And how that man moves, I don't understand it, but he's picking up some bags as well. So that's definitely enticing. I also resonated with what you said about Bohm. I mean, I'm kind of just, right there with you on a lot of these. I think Bohm is the least exciting probably of this group. He's not really as much of a home run hitter as he looks like he should be in game. Also kind of more of a line drive guy with less average appeal than Yandy. But Pasquantino, I wrote about him in our sleepers article for the exact same reason that you said. I mean, he was going about 80 picks higher last year and he injured his shoulder. And he was having a little bit of a slight regression before that, but he also had a drop in the BABIP during that time last year. So I think if he settles in somewhere even between 22 and 23, you're probably getting a good value on that because he was going inside the top 100 last year, hitting for good average. And I don't want to just say this based on, his build, but man's got some stature to him. There's no reason why he couldn't start poking balls out.
Yeah. We got a question, actually. Let me know your thoughts on Josh Naylor versus Vinny P. They're right back-to-back in my own rankings. I have them projected, you know, pretty close to each other. The only real difference is that I think Naylor is going to steal more, and that's why I have Naylor slotted one spot higher. Games played, at bats, runs, homers, RBIs, batting average, they're all very, very similar for me, and I think for a lot of different projections. I think I would just slightly lean Naylor, though, simply because you're looking at a better lineup and you're going to get some steals out of it. I know Kansas City has improved, but I think it's kind of been overblown a little bit. Like, don't get me wrong, I still love Pasquantino, but people have talked about how Kansas City's like this whole new offense, and it's like they added Renfro, and you know maybe Velasquez is able to stick, but I don't think they're a massively different team than they were last year when they lost 105 games or something. Do you think that the Royals are going to surprise us this year? Is it just me who's more skeptical, or what are your thoughts there?
I also agree with you on that. A lot of people are kind of hyping up the Royals, I think also just because of the pitching acquisitions, because that's really where they were just, I mean, horrendous last year was the pitching. I don't think their offense is that enticing either. I would probably lean Naylor slightly also. But it's not like the Guardians lineup is very moving either. And they're, like you said, they're back-to-back in your rankings. Naylor did drive in quite a bit of runs last year, even in a season where he was slightly limited. And it's almost hard for me to even imagine Vinny pushing that many RBIs, even in like his 80th percentile outcome. So I think I'd probably barely side with Naylor as well.
Naylor has some very weird run and RBI splits. If you look at the last two seasons combined in 2022 and 2023, he had 99 runs scored in the 2 years combined. And the crazy thing is that he had 176 RBI in the same time frame. So there's usually like not much of a disparity between runs and RBI. Sometimes there is a little bit, but to have the difference just over 2 years be almost 80 there, it's kind of shocking. It's very hard to project him, because if you're looking at just a standard, you know, regression, it doesn't even bring him down very much. And especially because he's only played 120 games in each of the last two seasons. If Naylor is able to replicate his numbers, even 80% of them over a regular full 140, 150 games, then we could be looking at like a 28 homer, 12 stolen base guy who hits 300, drives in 110 runs, and then the run scored is kind of the iffy part there. But he could be just incredible. And I do agree with you about the lineup not being that much better in Cleveland. I just think there's more potential there. Kwan, Jimenez, Ramirez, those guys batting right in front of him, you know, there's going to be the RBI opportunities. I think the run opportunities may improve a little bit as well, depending on what we see with Bo Naylor. I love him. If Manzardo is able to be a regular, which I'm not 100% sure if that's their plan, but he might have some more reinforcements behind him that would also add to the run total. It is a very interesting question. And the last thing I'll say on that is I do have them very close and Naylor just ahead, but there's a difference of about 40 spots, 35 spots in ADP. So I guess based on the value of the pick, Pasquantino might be the choice depending on your build. But I think that Naylor is the guy that I would slightly lean towards there. Not a massive preference, though. I honestly don't have a hard line to draw there. I think that they're fairly similar. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, I agree. And hopefully those additions at the back end of the lineup would bring up his run total, because I'm sure last year he was getting down on his knees in the dugout to Gabriel Arias and Miles Straw, like, please just drive me in. Come on, man.
Yeah, there's not really much you can do when those guys are behind you in the order. But let's move on and talk about kind of the last tier of acceptable guys. We may go a little bit beyond it and just talk about some other interesting names as well, but these are kind of the last generally startable players. Starting off here with Jaime Candelario and Brandon Drury, Nathaniel Lowe, Andrew Vaughn, Anthony Rizzo, Ryan Mountcastle, Justin Turner, and Jose Abreu. These are kind of the last pickings if you've really punted the position. Now, I've talked about how I don't mind waiting. I think if these are your starters, you've probably waited too long, with the possible exception of maybe a Candelario now, because again, the Red situation is just kind of a little bit more clear with Noelvi Marte going to be missing half the season. So what are your thoughts on this tier in general? Are you interested in any of these guys? Is this kind of just too late for you to be interested? What are your thoughts here before we get into specifics on the tier?
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the corner infield tier. I mean, these are the guys you're trying to put in first base, third base slot. I definitely agree with you with pretty much all of them. If they're your starting first baseman, you better be really strong in pitching or outfield or something, because it's definitely a little bit too far to wait. Maybe Nate Lowe, if you are, you know, banking on him coming back from his injury in May and hitting the ground running, that could be a mindset that you have, but that might not work out the way you intended it to. So corner infield tier for sure.
Yeah. I mean, now that I really think about it, and just in this tier, honestly, Anthony Rizzo is somebody who I've gone back and forth about a few times this offseason. Before he got hurt last year, he was incredible. And that Yankees lineup has now added Juan Soto, so it's just going to be naturally improved a little bit. The thing with Rizzo that worries me is the fact that his injury was a concussion, and concussions are the most unpredictable injury in the world. I don't know if there's anything more unpredictable in sports than a concussion. You can be fine, and then the next day you're just not fine. It's very hard to predict the course that's going to happen. So he looks fine now, but the reason, like, I'm in Toronto, I grew up playing hockey, the most stereotypical thing. But I stopped playing hockey because I had a few concussions, and they would have just random times pop up, and I wouldn't be able to really do anything when the symptoms would kind of recur. So that's something that kind of worries me a little bit. But at that price, at $245, I have taken him a couple times just as a, you know, as a corner infielder, even as a bench player in that range. What are your thoughts on Rizzo? Are you worried at all about the concussion thing, about the age thing at all, maybe? Where are you at on him as a whole right now?
I wouldn't say I'm too worried about him having a low floor. I feel like he's still probably going to put up decent numbers. I guess the thing for me would be, is he even really hitting the ball at an above average level right now at age 34? I know he's a lefty in Yankee Stadium, which will certainly help him maybe push a couple more out, but I'll probably just resort to a guy I know here in Ryan Mountcastle. But Mountcastle battled vertigo last year, which cost him about a month of the season. And he's the kind of guy that can get on some torrid hot streaks. And I mean, if he played at like American Family Field instead of Camden Yards, he might be pushing to the 30, 35 home run range. So I think that there's maybe guys in this range who offer a little bit more in the way of like excitement than Rizzo. I think Rizzo's kind of that boring veteran who's very steady and doesn't really move me with upside.
That's fair. I think that is definitely fair, and I agree with the Mountcastle point, having seen it as a Blue Jay fan. Just unbelievable what he has done. Just look up, I don't have him in front of me, look up Mountcastle stats against the Blue Jays. It's just unbelievable what he does. But he's somebody where, you know, 30 home runs is not out of the question for him. He's done it before. Now, that wall definitely doesn't do him any favors, but he had 18 home runs in 115 games last year while, you said, battling vertigo. If he is able to be healthy, and again, it's another kind of, you know, vertigo is another one that can kind of just pop up randomly. It's not something that's like a broken arm where once it's gone, it's gone. But a healthy Ryan Mountcastle at this price is incredibly appealing. That lineup, I think it's going to feature Jackson Holliday. I think that they're still going to be real. I don't think they're going to be quite as good as last year, because I just think they were kind of firing on all cylinders. Everything went perfect for them. I don't think they're a 100-win team every year now. I think they're still really, really damn good. And Mountcastle in the middle of that order could very easily be a 25 to 30 home run guy who's knocking in 90 runs, decent batting average. He's 263 career hitter. So there's a lot to like from him as well. And honestly, you could make the argument, depending on how worried you are about Mountcastle, that you could have him as a first baseman and not just as a corner, that he would, but that he is potentially a guy who could slot into that spot and provide some pretty decent value for you. Jose Abreu is another guy who I think is kind of interesting just solely because of the lineup that he is in. And at times he did look like his old self last year. RBI should still be aplenty. We're still talking, again, last year, 90 RBI. And we're going well past pick 300. Is he somebody that you'll take as a bench guy just to see if maybe he can get some of that old magic back this year? Or are you kind of done with Jose Abreu?
Well, I did pick him in TGFBI as my corner, but I scoffed a little bit when I did it. I picked him at 277 to be my corner infield, and I threw up in my mouth a little bit just because I don't think he's going to be very good. And for the majority of the season, it kind of felt like he was really bad. And then in those last couple months, he turned it on. So he is known to be a great hitter. So maybe he'll rejuvenate himself back into this position of being somewhat relevant. I don't feel like the ceiling is much higher than this. I kind of just took him because he was the only guy in between this and the tier below for me to get a corner, and I waited a little long, so I landed on him. But I'm definitely not very intrigued by him. I wanted to circle back to Mountcastle for a second because I think one of the main downsides really to his potential is that I think he is going to be a little bit platooned. I think Ryan O'Hearn is going to factor into the first base mix. I think there's all these young guys coming up. It's so possible that Heston Kerstad factors in or Santander gets moved to first base occasionally to accommodate a Kowser or a Kerstad in the outfield. So I think the only thing that's not a certainty with Mountcastle is he going to play 5 to 6 days a week? Because the talent's there, but the talent's everywhere on that team. So I can't guarantee Mountcastle gets 550 at-bats or plate appearances.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I think that kind of factors into the discount that you're getting. If we knew that Mountcastle was a full-time player, for sure there's no way he's going at pick 250. That's kind of it for me in terms of the interesting guys in this range. Justin Turner had a great year last year coming to Toronto to my team. Should make me excited, I guess, but at his age and considering that he's the consolation prize for Ohtani, it's kind of tough to get excited about Justin Turner in any sense. I don't know. Maybe he could repeat what he did last year. I just don't think that there's really much there with him. Outside of the guys that we've mentioned, is there anybody outside of these main guys? And we've gone down about 27 names deep in ADP. Is there anybody outside of that range that is still interesting to you in any way, either as a corner part or as a bench piece? Or is this kind of where you've tapped out?
I think at this point, it depends a lot on your league size because our ADP is getting into like the 350s now. So if you're in a standard 10 team or 12 team, you're probably just filling out the bottom of your bench right now. I think that you mentioned Manzardo earlier. He's mildly appealing as a flyer if he ends up making the team opening day or if they allude to the fact that he's going to play early on because he does have a lot of intriguing power. So he could be a bit of a flyer pick. I always find Kirilloff a little bit intriguing. I picked him as a bench guy in TGFBI just because it does seem like it's there, but the Twins just have like three Alex Kirilloffs. They have him and Wallner and Larnick, and where do they put all of them? So it's interesting to see if it all clicks for him this year. And I'm not going to lie, I let my fandom get in the way a little bit here, but I think Ryan O'Hearn is kind of an interesting, fun flyer if you have like pick 400 in a draft, because man, it looked like he figured something out last year. He hit almost 300. I mean, he was driving the ball. I know that he's probably not going to get drafted in most leagues that late, but if you happen to be playing in a league that deep, I really liked what I saw from him. Coming from somebody who watched every game of the Orioles, I think that he will be around in that talented Orioles lineup this year some more.
There's definitely a chance he figured something out. I have a hard time kind of buying into it, but the projection systems all really like him and do kind of seem to think that he actually did figure something out. All of them are calling for not a repeat in the batting average, but pretty much everywhere else. They're even in batting average, they think it'll be about 260, the average projection system. So that's still very acceptable considering the price. There's actually a couple of guys I don't mind at all in this range. It's hard for me to quit Jake Cronenworth. I know I should just be done with Jake Cronenworth, but first and second base eligibility, he's going to bat third in that lineup. He's going to be right around Tatis and Machado. I don't mind it. Again, as kind of like a bench piece late in drafts. This is not, again, like you mentioned, for 10 or 12 team players, really. But if you're playing in deeper leagues, and even potentially for 12 team leagues, we've seen Cronenworth do it in the past. Last year was awful for him, but 100 runs is none of the question. 85 RBIs is none of the question if he sticks in that spot in the lineup. So I think he's somebody to consider. DJ LeMahieu is by all the we have so many different ways to, and you know, been a lot of talk on Twitter recently about projecting lineups. We have a lot of different sites that project DJ LeMahieu as the leadoff hitter for the Yankees. And if he is leading off right in front of Soto and Judge with first base and third base eligibility, then I think there's a lot to like in DJ LeMahieu as well. Again, not somebody being drafted as a target in shallow leagues, but if DJ LeMahieu ended up on a lot of 12-team rosters throughout the year, I wouldn't at all be surprised. Am I crazy? Are we kind of past it with DJ LeMahieu? I mean, he's still leading off for the Yankees. That's kind of the main thing here. If he was batting seventh or eighth, I wouldn't really care. But I think it's just the fact that he's in front of Soto and Judge for me is what has me a little bit interested at this point.
I think the thing with LeMahieu is that there's absolutely no ceiling. The ceiling is like 2 feet above the floor.
Yeah.
But it's justifiable. The Yankees lineup is very talented. I think we did see the hit kind of diminish from LeMahieu last year. It doesn't seem like he's hitting as well as he once was in his career. But if he is going to lead off, he's going to give you professional at-bats, and he'll get on base at an acceptable rate. So to fill out the end of your bench, I can totally see it.
Yeah, that's kind of the only spot for me, right? Around 28, 29, 30, just kind of filling out the bench. And if he does happen to, because we're talking about a guy who's won a few batting championships, maybe he can get back to like a 280, 290 guy with 100 runs scored. If that's the case, then I'll buy into it. The last thing I want to ask you here is just, who's your number one target across all of the first basemen that we've talked about? Who's your absolute favorite first baseman this year? And who's the guy that you are absolutely avoiding at all costs?
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Man, that's a tough one, because like we've said this whole time, I really do like so many of these guys, and I know you do too. I think kind of that early third tier range, man, it's really hard for me to even pick one. Yeah. But Naylor, Yandy, I got Torkelson in that range in TGFBI, but his stock has shot up more recently, so he's kind of above that now.
Yeah,
I would say if you could lock down Naylor or Yandy, you're in a good place, I think, to get some very solid first base play. As far as a guy that I really don't see myself drafting at all, I think I'm going to go with Pete Alonso, just because I think that there's too much other five category potential or ace potential talents around him at pick 25 where he's going right now. And I just don't think he fits my mold of what I'm looking for at that spot.
Yeah, I can definitely understand Alonso. He's not like a full fade for me, but there are a lot of concerns. That batting average should bounce back, but maybe it doesn't bounce back all the way, and we're talking about 235. The Mets are kind of in flux as an organization. They were supposed to contend last year, and then they sold off parts, and there's talk of Alonso still all the time that I see that he's a trade target, that he might not even be a Met. So I don't know exactly how safe he is. He's not somebody who's going to steal for you. Yeah, he should hit 45 homers, but is that going to be more of a Pete Alonso type of 45 homers? Because if I'm just looking for that kind of stat line, I can get it with Kyle Schwarber like 70, 80 picks later, albeit with a worse batting average probably, but the difference probably isn't that stark. My targets are the same as yours. I think Naylor and Pasquantino are the two guys that I've targeted the most. And I honestly do have kind of a soft spot for Anthony Rizzo. I am worried, but I do have faith that if he is on the field, he'll be very good. And the fade for me would be Matt Olson. It's, again, I hate paying for the career year. That's mainly the thing with me. It doesn't matter if it's the first round or like the 10th round. If I'm paying a premium because a guy did something he's never done before, I am a little bit skeptical. If you are taking him, then you're potentially passing up on Jose Ramirez, Austin Riley, SP1 of like a Corbin Burns type, or maybe even like Francisco Lindor. There's Zach Wheeler in that. Like, there's so much that I really like in that range. With Olson, I just think that, you know, he's probably closer to a 40 home run guy than a 50 home run guy. And while that's not the end of the world, that's a huge drop from the 54 or whatever it was. Everything was kind of a perfect storm for Atlanta last year. And we've already seen Acuna. I don't really have that much concern anymore, but it's definitely something. And Acuna is the force of that offense. If Acuna has to miss any time, or if he's not 100%, then everybody kind of gets knocked down a little bit. And I don't have that same kind of concern if I'm going to be taking, like, even Jordan Alvarez. Jordan Alvarez has had his own kind of injury concerns and whatnot. But I'd much rather take Jordan Alvarez than I would Matt Olson. You're filling a more scarce position. It's in the same range. I just haven't found myself clicking on Olson. He's somebody where I feel like he'll be moving down draft boards a little bit as people start doing their, like, main event drafts and pitchers get pushed up. I feel like Olson is a guy with the Acuna kind of uncertainty, he'll be somebody who gets pushed down. And Acuna, I mean, it's not like we're overly concerned at this point, but it's still something that's in the back of my head that he might not be 100% right. So Olson would be the bigger fade for me than Alonso, I think. But neither one of them is somebody that I've drafted through 11 drafts. So read into that what you will.
I think we're both fading them for the same reason overall, yeah. Too, just that we like the other options better. They're obviously going to hit a lot of home runs, but there's other people later, like you said, Schwarber, who can hit a lot of home runs. And Jordan, I definitely like him more than both of them as well. So I agree with that.
Yeah. First base is so deep. There's no need to jump those guys up or take them even in the second round, or some people taking Matt Olson in the first round. It's still happening sometimes, not as often as it once was, but for me, that would be a bit of a red flag for both of them. And, you know, Alonso, like I mentioned, his price has gone up as well. His minimum pick in this month of March is 19, so he's getting more expensive as well. But Daniel, I want to say thank you for coming on the show, man. It's great to get you on. We'll have to get you on again throughout the season. I'm going to be better about bringing guys from within Sports Ethos onto the show, and you were the first one of the year. So thank you so much for helping me break down first base.
Yeah, for sure, Joe. It was a blast. I'm eager to hop back on and discuss this more with you. I think we saw very eye to eye on the matter, so we'll see if we see eye to eye on other issues as well.
Yeah, we'll talk throughout the year. Daniel is a big Orioles fan, and we're maybe going to be getting some Orioles content if I can get that out of you, along with a lot of other stuff that we are going to be announcing. We'll be talking on Twitter over the next couple of weeks about what to expect from everybody in season. But Daniel is one of the newest members of the team here. Everybody should be following him on Twitter at drot_6. That's DROT_6. He put together the sleeper and bust articles in our draft guide. Did a fantastic job. A lot of you love sleepers and busts, so go ahead and check out Daniel's work in the description of the episode. The draft guide, I think, I mean, I'm a little bit biased here, but it's really great stuff from everybody. The articles, the tools, the rankings, the dynasty stuff. Like, I think that we've done a really great job of putting this together for you. So check it out at the link in the description. You guys can check me out over on Twitter at JoeOrico99, and make sure you're following Ethos Fantasy BB to stay up to date with all the new articles from Daniel, from myself, podcasts, everybody else contributing, all of the fantasy baseball stuff. That is where you can find it, at Ethos Fantasy BB. And of course, sportsethos.com, guys. We'll be back again tomorrow. We're tackling third base with Derek Van Riper from The Athletic. But until then, everybody, take care and have a great night.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.